And that brings us to the guy who is, in fact, sitting here with us in the studio from just down the street. In fact, it's Joe Wright. And I'm going to get this name wrong, so help me with it. Varkoshevsky Observatory?
Very good. The W's are pronounced with the V. It's Varkoshevsky, but we say Warko for short.
Warko for short, and you're vice president of the Astronomical Society, which Paul was mentioning earlier is a great way sometimes for people to get connected to things going on here. You're also on the staff at the Powell Observatory in Lewisburg. So I think as a sort of launching pad from where we've just been to literally what people can look for in the skies above us, this is perfectly timed opportunity to say, what in particular are you guys pointing to right about in these great summertime nights?
Well, even in the light pollution of the urban core in Kansas City, on the roof of Royal Hall on Friday nights, we have a variety of telescopes and quite a few objects that we can actually see that are faint. As you might have already heard, you see by contrast. If there's not much contrast, you don't see the faint objects. But at the Warko, routinely, of course, we look at the moon, our closest neighbor. The moon is a fantastic object. If you have a pair of binoculars, get them out. Take your family outside. Get your neighbors, kids, and look up at the moon throughout its cycle as it goes around the Earth. And we see it in different phases. From there, we move on out through the solar system. Right now, we're looking at Saturn. If you've never seen Saturn through a larger telescope, we routinely can see the Cassini division. That's that clear gap in the rings, and you start to see the coloring of the upper atmosphere around of Saturn, plus up to seven moons.
Yeah, Saturn is one of those just really iconic images, isn't it? Because there's so much to see involved with it.
Yes, Saturn and Jupiter are the wow getters. Sometimes people have trouble, especially younger kids, seeing objects through the telescope. But when they see Saturn, you get that wow, and that's really the paycheck when we're volunteering to hear people mention, you know, that they can see the features. Like I said, the cloud banding. The on Jupiter, we see the great red spot on quite a few nights that we're up there. And the moons, they start thinking, hey, there's other objects, you know, going around these other worlds that are out there. You know, it's just not us on this blue marble going through space, that they're really seeing that object out there. It's not a NASA photo.
Well, the notion that there's also a comet out there that people are going to be talking a lot about seems to be one of those things that I bet you're going to get more and more questions on.
As the year progresses in the fall, there's a comet Ison that will be approaching the sun. It's estimated right now that it will pass within the solar atmosphere at 800,000 miles above the sun. Will it fry or come back out is yet to be seen. But if expectations pan out, this could be one of the great comets to see in our lifetime.
Will it fry? Is that astronomical talk?
Well, blatantly, yes, in a sense that with the gravity of the sun, that's the engine of our solar system, it could pull the comet apart, pull it inside where it doesn't come back out of the orbit and head back out of the solar system. Basically, it will vaporize and boil away if it doesn't survive.
What are you predicting?
I hope it comes back around so we can see it again.
How spectacular would it be?
Actually, this could be it's going to be a naked eye object. You won't need, hopefully, like I said, at night, you will not need a large telescope or binoculars. You'll be able to see it. There's been a few comets in history that have actually been visible during the daytime. If it makes it to that point, it will be spectacular.
Well, in a world where end-time movies are all about us, I mean, does that generate a little bit of extra zip for this particular comet?
Oh, yes. You know, especially with what happened earlier this year with the asteroid and the meteor. And the asteroid passed close, mm-hmm. and then the meteor, you know, broke up in Russia. So these approaches like this always heighten the interest, and we hope it continues to foster more interest because, really, we want to inspire people to get out and looking up.
Well, you heard Paul Bogard there talking about, you know, how the light pollution is making that harder.
It really is. On the roof at Warko, we do look at faint objects the closest stars are like Sirius that you see in the night sky overhead tonight, and Vega, the bright one in the constellation Lyra. If you ever saw the movie Contact, that was where Jodie Foster got the plans for the machine. Those are very bright stars and relatively close, 26, 27 light years. When we look at something like the Ring Nebula, this is where a star is in the constellation of Lyra. A star, through its life cycle, expands out and cracks down because of pressure trying to push out and gravity pull it in. And it's left this faint ring of hydrogen gas that is 10,000 times fainter than the stars that you can see overhead of Kansas City. And we can pull that out with the scopes on top of the roof to see what it's like with a darker sky. Then Powell Observatory with our 30-inch out there south of Kansas City in Lewisburg, where the sky is darker, has more of a contrast and a better view.
So if I get out to Miami County, I've just got advantage right off the bat?
Yes. The folks around Kansas City are situated in a good spot to actually get some observing through telescopes between UMKC and the Warco and Powell Observatory. On Friday night at Warco, Saturday night at Powell, there's a lot of observing opportunities for the Kansas City area residents.
And that's a regular thing? Expected every Friday, expected every Saturday?
May through October, the observatories are open. We get to see if the clouds are clear. If there are no clouds, then we have nice viewing.
Okay. Well, we've got Bob on the line here from Blue Springs. Bob, you're on up to date. Bob? Well, Bob must be out looking for comets, but he's a member of the Astronomy Club, and we talked with Paul about how people can use those kinds of organizations, those kinds of opportunities to get their kids looking up into the sky, maybe away from video games. I don't know. Is it harder and harder to get them, or are we still naturally at our heart wanting to know what's up there?
Kids are great. They're not afraid to ask any questions. We are trying to get more youth into astronomy. There are even observing programs geared for young people from 8 years old. One of the youngest people to give a presentation on solar system objects at one of the ASKC regular meetings was 8 years old and did a 20-minute presentation on solar system objects. And that young man is in his third year at the Air Force Academy in Colorado Springs.
I'm also thinking meteor showers are one of those things that I'm always hoping to see when I look up into the sky. And there's an August kind of regular opportunity to do that. What's coming up?
Well, your wait is not too long. In August 11th to the 13th, the Perseid meteor shower. Now, meteor showers are named for the direction that the meteors look like they all come from, kind of like converging railroad tracks look like they go to one point. The Perseids will come out of the area of Perseus. Meteor showers are caused by the tails of comets, the debris of comets, the ice and dust particles that are left over. Earth happens, the comet comes through the solar system, and Earth happens to pass through the tail. Now, this has been going on for years. It's not a new comet. This has been around quite a while. That's just the debris fill left, and hopefully the moon will be in a good position where it won't be a full moon. Go outside the city. You can come down to the Powell Observatory in the park. There's plenty of space. Just bring some snacks, a blanket, and lay out around 10 o'clock at night and start watching for meteors. Now, the peak will be around 2 or 3 in the morning or later, but you'll see sporadic meteors throughout the night.
Yeah, that's kind of the trick, is a lot of times the real height of it is more 2, 3 a.m., isn't it?
Yes, it's not very convenient for some of us that don't want to stay up so late.
Yeah, but for those who do, the payoff is pretty good. There's just something, I don't know, why is it so visceral of an effect?
We can't recreate it. What you see in the sky is not recreated by man. You can go to a planetarium, but it's just not that same effect that you get seeing it firsthand, knowing that you are floating through space on Earth, and there are things out there that can collide. We know they collide with other planets, and it's just amazing to watch.
Bob, we've got you back.
All right.
What would you like to discuss here?
About the fact we have to buy filters now, us amateur and professional astronomers, to make those faint objects show up better when we're living here in the city and trying to see something up there.
Yeah,
regarding light pollution, basically.
Yeah, these are blocking some of the unshielded streetlights?
Yes. What, Bob?
Well, Yeah, it's just the overall light dome of a big city like Kansas City that causes trouble.
Mr. Wright.
Some of the what Bob's talking about, we have there are particular filters for different types of objects, like the Ring Nebula I was talking about earlier. Some objects emit light in different spectrum, different wavelengths. You've seen some of this in NASA photos on TV or online where they talk about infrared, X-ray, ultraviolet. And these filters actually can intensify that view by blocking out some of the bad light. Also, there are sky glow filters that can filter out the sky glow from some of the street lighting that's out there. And then also for the other object that we haven't mentioned is the sun to look at. Both observatories have equipment on the roof and at Powell to actually safely observe the sun in what we call a white light filter, similar to a welder's mask where you can see sunspots and several other surface features, or special telescopes that are called Hydrogen Alpha that you can see the solar prominences, the loops that come off the sun, and some of the other solar filters. So it's a day and nighttime observing at both places.
We've got Larry from Overland Park. Welcome to Up to Date.
Thank you for taking my call. I taught astronomy to inner-city kids and to the Boy Scouts, and one of the things that I did to make it kind of relevant to them was to compare a star so many light years away from the Earth, say, I think one of them was like 435 light years, to an event that took place on Earth. And about that time, Magellan was circumnavigating the Earth. So the light that is now reaching you from that star is when Magellan was doing his circumnavigation. And it really brought it back, like Alpha Centauri is fairly close. And by picking different stars that are kind of geared, the distance is geared to events in their lives that they would be familiar with. And it seemed to really work out well.
Isn't it great when you can tie one thing to another like that? It sounds like this is a very open-ended canvas.
Oh, yeah. What Larry's talking about, astronomy is not real time in a sense that we don't see it. It just didn't happen unless it's right on the other side of the dome above our heads. We are seeing in the past, so that is a great activity to do, especially if you're out camping or down at the H. Robardo Scout Reservation where there's pretty good skies. I mean, I grew up down there every summer camping out and would take a telescope down there when I got older. So you're looking back in time and relating it to what happened like 26 years ago for the closest stars. Well, what was going on 26 years ago, 400 years ago, or 10,000 years ago? Or, if you're looking at the Andromeda Galaxy, 2.5 million years ago.
Ooh. Well, Ruth Ann had something happen 60-some years ago when she saw the Perseid shower. Ruth Ann, was it in 1946 or 47?
Something like that.
How great was it?
That's my story, really. You can't see this in the city anymore, but at that time I was living on 43rd and Locust, and me and a boyfriend of mine and a couple dates and things like that got a blanket and put it on the front lawn, and we were there for hours watching the absolute depthless beauty of it, and we couldn't stay away.
Sounds like it stayed with you really vividly.
I've never forgotten it. I've always tried to come out and look whenever it happens here, but I never see anything where I'm living now, and still in the heart of the city, but never seeing a thing.
Well, it's a great memory, and we appreciate you sharing it with us here on Up to Date. Thanks, Ruth Ann. And again, that it's that kind of stuff that people really do hang on to.
Yes, you don't forget it. The things that you're looking at are just not objects that, you know, gravitation is keeping them together. They're expanding, exploding. There's beauty. There's beauty in the sky, whether it's the sun that causes everything on Earth to grow. It causes our seasons, you know, along with the tilt of the Earth. But when you look at an object like a globular cluster, you're talking about a snowball of stars that could have anywhere from 50,000 to 300,000 stars that have a common gravitational center. And whether you see it at the Warco or you go out to Powell where it's darker, it's like diamond dust on black velvet. It's just amazing to think about what's going on and what is out there and how, like Paul said earlier, in a sense, how insignificant we actually can be in this universe.
So do you bounce back and forth between Powell and the Warco?
Yes. We have duty teams. I'm one of the team leaders. We have seven teams that put on the presentation Saturday night. There's a good chance I'll be at Warco on Friday nights as being the operations manager between the school and the ASKC. We have a great staff at UMKC with Dr. McIntosh and Broadwin, who has Dr. Broadwin's been accepted to the Euclid mission with the European Space Agency to study dark matter and dark energy.
And we didn't even get a chance to really talk about some new telescopes, some of the new space operations that are maybe coming around. But hopefully those are some of the things you may get to share with people when they come out.
Right. And one of the biggest things actually for the ASKC is not necessarily a new telescope. It's been a dream for almost a decade to rebuild or expand PAL. And we're actually gotten to that point where we're looking at raising money to have a new science center and add a second telescope up to 1.5 meters in diameter and a planetarium down near PAL, and actually have a real, well, not I shouldn't say real, but have a science center that is for our members and the public to use.
Well, good plans afoot, and we hope people will take advantage of these opportunities. Joe Wright is the operations manager for Warkoshevsky Public Observatory at UMKC. You can find more information on all our broadcasts at kcur.org. You know, you should also remember to follow us on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We are at KCUR Up to Date. After the devastation of a natural disaster, the Red Cross is always there to help, but what is it like picking up the pieces? Tomorrow on the program, a look at disaster relief. Plus, we will explore the world of art forgery. The show is produced by Steven Steigman, Danny Alexander, Beth Lipoff, Caitlin Brennan, and Sangeeta Shastri. I'm Randy Mason, in for Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.